Well, it may be time we can hear, I take it. Yeah,
Yes.
and thing. And we're still in that long chapter, Ithaca, question and answer. And we came as far as Bloom's emotions about his wife's behavior. And the last thing was equanimity, when you have take it with well, with coolness and balance and all of that, more than inevitable, irreparable. That's where we were. Then we go on from here.
Why more abnegation than jealousy, less envy than equanimity? From outrage, matrimony, to outrage, adultery, there arose naught but outrage, copulation. If the matrimonial violator of the matrimonial violated had not been outraged by the adulterous violator of the adulterously violated, what retribution, if any? Assassination? Never, as two wrongs do not make one right. Duel by combat? No. Divorce? Not now. Exposure by mechanical artifice, automatic bed, or individual testimony, concealed ocular witness, not yet. The suit for damages by legal influence, or simulation of assault with evidence of injury sustained, self-inflicted, not impossibly. If any, positively connivance, introduction of emulation, material, a prosperous rival agency of publicity, moral, a successful rival agent of intimacy. Depreciation, alienation, humiliation, separation, protecting the one separated from the other, protecting separator from both. By what?
So, then the various devices are compared, more aggravation than jealousy, less envy. These were the four elements. From outrage, and matrimony is already considered an outrage, to outrage adultery, there arose nothing but outrage, copulation, the psychological thing. Yet the matrimonial violator, Boylan, of the matrimonially violated Bloom, had not been outraged by the adulterous violator of the adulterously violated. And you can see that just the same terms are really handed around without much violator and violated. And everything is an outrage. Then, what retribution, if any? And you know, in these many novels are about that Anna Karenina and others in the 19th century, Madame Bovary, it often ends with a duel or something like that, or a murder, assassination, never. As two wrongs did not make one right. Duel by combat, no. Now that was 19th century. They're offered that the men had to duel themselves by combat, one against one. Divorce, not now. It's rare that the word divorce comes, not now. Does Bloom thinks not now, but perhaps later? There is a scholar, American lawyer, who wrote a whole book about divorce, how divorce could have been possible. But I cannot see in the whole book that we read that Bloom at any one time thought of divorcing her. No, as I learned from that book, it would be technically possible. Then exposure by mechanical artifice, an automatic bed. You could, how do you find out there's adultery? You could have a trap. And that mechanical artifice, I'm quite sure, refers to the Odyssey, when in a song they talk about Aphrodite, the most beautiful woman, married to Hephaestus, a limping, elderly man, has an affair with Ares, the war god, and Hephaestus provides to bear it with something very fine threads that you can hardly see, and the loving couple, they're caught there, and then all the gods come and laugh. And that is where the famous expression, Homeric laughter, is. That's where it is based. And there's quite an interesting story that somebody says to Hermes, would you like to be in this situation that all everybody was in? And he said, oh yes, I wouldn't mind to be able to be with Aphrodite. So that is probably one of the origins of that individual testimony. Concealed ocular witness. Often they engage a detective to find, to trace and trail the couple. Not yet. Shoot for damages by legal inferences that you could shoot, or simulation of assault with evidence of injury sustained, self-inflicted. You could, of course, do something to yourself and then claim that the partner did it, which I believe took place in that case that has now in the newspaper. Not impossibly, if any. Positively, connivance. Now, you know what connivance is? It's a Latin word meaning you close one eye and pretend not to see it. So in a way, you passively condone it by simply not registering it. So and that is what Bloom does. He knows it's happening, but he doesn't take any steps. Bloom could easily have gone home at 6 o'clock or at 5 o'clock and fiddle around. There was nothing, but he's connived. And I think it's very interesting that and now we can say that in the fourth chapter, when Bloom picks up the letter that the post brought and brings it up to Molly, and he knows who wrote the letter, and he can almost guess who is it, that Bloom, when he enters the bedroom to adapt his eyesight, the light, he half closes his eyes. Now, that is what he's actually doing with the whole day. He half closes his eyes and doesn't take any active steps. Now, we can say that. It would be quite wrong to point that out before we know what's going to happen. Introduction of emulation. Matilda Bosch arrival into public demore. So you can have an affair too. Something that's what you do. Depreciation, alienation, humiliation, separation, protecting the one side of the other. So you could say nasty things about the other, or you could separate, protecting separator from both. You could just move apart. Yeah, I think that's my room. Yeah.
What reflections did he, a conscious reactor against the void in certitude, justify to himself his sentiments? The preordained frangibility of the hymen, the presupposed intangibility of the thing in itself, the incongruity and disproportion between the self-prolonging tension of the thing proposed to be done and the self-abbreviating relaxation of the thing done, the fallaciously inferred debility of the female, the muscularity of the male, the variations of ethical codes, the natural grammatical transition by inversion involving no alteration of sense of an aorist preterite proposition, parsed as masculine subject, monosyllabic, onomatopoeic, transitive verb with direct feminine object. From the active voice into its correlative aorist preterite proposition, parsed as feminine subject, auxiliary verb, and quasi-monosyllabic onomatopoeic past participle with complementary masculine agent in the passive voice. The continued product of seminators by generation, the continual production of semen by distillation, the futility of triumph or protest or vindication, the inanity of extolled virtue, the lethargy of nescient matter, the apathy of the stars. In what final satisfaction did these antagonistic sentiments and reflections, reduced to their simplest forms, converge? Satisfaction at the ubiquity in Eastern and Western terrestrial hemispheres, In all habitable lands and islands explored or unexplored, the land of the midnight sun, the islands of the blessed, the isles of Greece, the land of promise, of adipose posterior female hemispheres, redolent of milk and honey, and of excretory sanguine and seminal warmth, reminiscent of secular families, of curves of amplitude, insusceptible of moods of impression or of contrarieties of expression, expressive of mute, immutable, mature animality.
Good. By what reflection did he, a conscious reactor against the void in certitude? Stephen has talked about everything is in certitude and void earlier in the book. So we know it's all hollow, we don't know anything. With what did Bloom justify himself? Then he says the preordained is something that is going to happen, and we know ordained by a higher power. Frangibility of the hymen, the female organ can be broken, frangible. That is losing the virginity. He says, but it's happening anyway. The presupposed intangibility, you cannot touch it, of the thing in itself. That's a different kind of thing. Now, the thing in itself is an expression from Kant, das Ding an sich, I believe. How that comes into it, and you cannot touch it. Then the incongruity and disproportion between the self-prolonging tension of the thing proposed to be done, what you suggest to be done, and the self-abbreviating. You have prolonging and abbreviating, relaxation of the thing done. It takes a long time for some to do, and then it is very short when you do it, and then it's relaxation. You see, it's not at all clear, even if you have been around this for a long time. The fallacy is a wrong conclusion, wrong logic. Fallaciously inferred the ability of the female. The woman is supposed to be weaker, and that's the fallacy. The muscularity of the male. Yeah, the woman is frail, weak. The man is strong, as the cliché is. Then, variations of ethical codes. Yeah, of course, customs and codes of behavior are different in various cultures. There's bigamy and all kinds of things. And then you get a long sentence that in a way could express what you say vulgarly with a word for copulation. And here it's given in exact grammar. The natural grammatic transition by inversion involving no alteration of meaning. Now what it says, as anticipating, is you can express an act actively or passively. Then as a transition by inversion involving no alteration of sense, often aorist preterite, this is past tense. Aorist is a past tense in Greek, and preterite is in Latin. Proposition, past is the grammatical analysis, but masculine subject, monosyllabic onomatopoeic transitive verb, and it's everybody's guess that you have a one monosyllable word that, of course, at the time of choice was totally unprintable. In fact, it was one of the shocks that in Ulysses, this word does in fact occur. Masculine, monosyllabic, one thing, Onomatopoeic, it sounds like what it does, transitive verb with direct feminine object. He does something to her. From the active voice, that's what I said, into its correlative aorist preteritate proposition, female subject, she is, auxiliary verb, quasi-monosyllabic onomatic past participle with complementary agent. She has been. So, masculine agent in the passive voice. So here is what a word to express something that was not printable in the passive voice. The continued product of seminators by generation. Yeah, you need semination. The continued production of semen by distillation. I don't quite know how semen is produced in the body. The futility of triumph or prostrate of vindication. All the moral expressions don't do much, don't help. The inanity of extolled, which is the, in a way, meaningless, the hollowness of praised virtue. Morality is that you praise virtue and condemn immoral things. So it doesn't do much. The lethargy of nescience matter. Matter doesn't know anything, has no moral knowledge nor emotion. Nescience is not knowing of matter. The apathy of stars, the stars don't care. What does it all mean? With distant stars, or in a thousand years, that kind of thing. In what final satisfaction did these antagonistic sentiments and reflections reduced to the simplest forms converge? How does it all come together? Satisfaction at the ubiquity, that is, it's everywhere, in Eastern, Western, terrestrial hemispheres, the two hemispheres, East and West, he has here, in all habitable lands and islands, explored or unexplored. And then you have a list of countries, the land of the midnight sun in the north, the island of the blessed, Celtic mythology has a place where the blessed are, island. The island of Greece, that's what it is. The land of promise, that is Israel for the Jews, the land of promise. But then these hemispheres, global hemispheres, are compared with anatomical female hemispheres at the back. The of adipose, that is containing fat, posterior female hemispheres, redolent of milk and honey. The Bible says it's a land of milk and honey. Of excretory, sanguine and sensual warmth, excretions and semen, also in the ejaculations, reminiscent of secular families of curves of amplitude, so it's geometric, insusceptible of moods of impression or of contrast of expression. I think one thing is being at that back of our bodies, we don't have too much expression. Expression of mute, immutable, mature animality. Here we come back to the animals, to something bodily and physical. And now we get to them.
Visible signs of anti-satisfaction: an approximate erection, a solicitous aversion, a gradual elevation, a tentative revelation, a silent contemplation. Then he kissed the plump, mellow, yellow, smeller melons of her rump. On each plump, melanous hemisphere, in the mellow yellow furrow, with obscure, prolonged, provocative melon smelliness oscillation. The visible signs of post-satisfaction, a silent contemplation, a tentative velation, a gradual abasement, a solicitous aversion, approximate erection. What followed this silent action? Somnolent invocation, less somnolent recognition, incipient excitation, catechetical interrogation.
Good, we stop here again. The visible signs of ante and post-satisfaction, before and after. An approximate erection, they're now coming together. A solicitous aversion, that is a turning towards something advert. An advertisement or advertisement is something we should turn to. A gradual elevation, lifting a tentative revelation, a silent contemplation. And you see the next paragraph is a different language. It's suddenly physical and emotional and sensuous. And you see here you have a verb, an active verb. Normally the whole chapter is nominal. It is nouns that are like antisatisfaction. But he kissed the plump, mellow, yellow, smellow, there's even an artificial word, smelling melons of her rump, melon, on each plump, melonous hemisphere in that mellow, yellow furrow with obscure, prolonged, provocative melon smellinous osculation. Osculation is a kiss. So you see, the language suddenly sticks out as something vibrant, plump, yellow, mellow, smellow, even to its word, melon, yellow melons it has. It is something that would fit the singing chapter, the sirens, because of its echoing phonetic repetitions and all of that. Mellow yellow furrow, obscure, and then again into Latin, obscure, prolonged, provocative, melon, smelliness, osculation. Now, osculation is a kiss. Os is mouth, and osculum is a little mouth, and that's the Latin for kiss. Now, somebody found out, and I quite admire that when you have the Latin word, it contains os. Osculus, as I say, is a diminutive, but os is mouth, and QLS, like in French Q, is the backside of us. So it is contained in the word, though originally the word doesn't say that, but it brings it out here. So Bloom is smelling, is kissing her backsides. Not the usual place, I suppose. Another remote thing is that when Odysseus came to his native island, Ithaca, he first kissed the ground. You know, that is another custom that you may have. Then it's the visible sign of post-satisfaction. A silent contemplation, a tentative velation. I suppose that means you bring the seat back again, a gradual abasement, a solicitous aversion, that is a turning away from it, and approximate erection. You see, this is in a way parallel or the opposite of the paragraph before the last, so ante post satisfaction. So physical acts are described in abstract language. What followed this silent action? Somnolent invocation. somewhere when you're still sleepy, invocation, she says something, she says, what is it, or something like that, less somnolent recognition, then she knows who's coming, not difficult to guess, incipient excitation, and then it says catechetical interrogation. And that is, as Joyce said, the technique of the whole chapter, question and answer. That's as in the Catechism of the Church. How many sins are there? 70 sins, and then you name them. So this, in a way, describes the whole chapter. This is what they're doing. And now it goes on. Now, obviously, she, and that's the interesting thing, she says, Babak, what did you do during the day? He, as we will see, does not say, what did you do during the day? So she asks the questions, and he gives some answers, as we can hear in the following. Yeah.
With what modifications did the narrator reply to this interrogation? Negative. He omitted to mention the clandestine correspondence between Martha Clifford and Henry Flower, the public altercation at and in the vicinity of the licensed premises of Bernard Kiernan and Company Limited, 8, 9, and 10 Little Britain Street, the erotic provocation and response thereto caused by the exhibitionism of Gertrude Gertie, surname unknown. Positive. He included mention of a performance by Mrs. Bandman Palmer of Lear at the Gaiety Theatre, 46, 47, 48, 49 South King Street, an invitation to supper at Wynn's, Murphy's Hotel, 35, 36, and 37 Lower Abbey Street, a volume of Pacamonist pornographical tendency entitled Sweets of Sin, anonymous author, a gentleman of fashion, a temporary concussion caused by a falsely calculated movement in the course of a post-scenal gymnastic display, the victim, since completely recovered, being Stephen Dedalus, professor and author, elder surviving son of Simon Dedalus, of no fixed occupation. An aeronautical feat executed by him, narrator, in the presence of a witness, the professor and author aforesaid, with promptitude of decision and gymnastic flexibility. Was the narration otherwise unaltered by modifications? Absolutely.
Good. So, with what modifications, certainly the list of what Bloom said, it only lists what he said that was not true. With what modifications, that is, not the actual facts. Negative. And of course, we understand that. He omitted to mention the clandestine correspondence with him, Arthur Cliff and Henry Flower. He doesn't say, of course, that he is exchanging letters with a woman, letters that, as we know, did not come to the house. So this is a secret kind of thing, though Bloom doesn't seem to want to develop it anyway. Then the public altercation in the vicinity of the licensed president of Bernard Kiernan Company Limited, 8, 9, and 10 Little Britain Street. So he doesn't say there was nearly came to blows in the Cyclops episode. Then the erotic provocation and response thereto caused by the exhibitionism of Gertrude Gertie. So never known. He doesn't say, of course, that he was excited and masturbated at the sight of a girl's legs. That's not something you tell your wife. Now, positive is that what he said he had done that he had not done. Positive. He included mention of a performance by Mrs. Bandman Palmer of Lear at the Gaiety Theatre. Bloom has seen the poster of the theatre performance, Lear, and in the fifth chapter we learn a little about Lear, about the Jewish community and the Gaiety Theatre, and then we have, in a pedantic way, the exact complete address, several houses together, of the theatre where he did not go. So he said he had been in the theatre because he did other things. An invitation to supper at Wynne's, Murphy's Hotel. So he said he was going to have supper. That's probably what he said to Molly. He didn't hear it before he left. I say, I may go to the theatre and I may have a dinner at Murphy's Hotel. In other words, he must have indicated that he would not be in the house in the evening. And 71 Abbey Street. And then a volume of Pecanimus, that is little sins, immoral, pornographical tendency, entitled Sweets of Sin, the book he picked up. Anonymous, author, a gentleman of fashion. So he does not say. However, he brought that book for Molly, so he will show it to her. A temporary concussion caused by 40 calorie movement in the course of Porcian gymnastic play. The victim, since completed, could be Stephen Dedalus. Now, Stephen Dedalus must have hurt his hand somehow. And he mentioned professor and author. Stephen is not the professor, and he is not yet an author. Eldest survivor, son of Simon Dedalus, of no fixed occupation, the mother, isn't it? An aeronautical feat executed by him, narrator in the presence of a witness, the aforesaid, and that is probably that he climbed over the area railing, as we saw at the beginning of the chapter, because he didn't have his key. So he climbed there, and he probably didn't want to say about that he forgot the key. With prompt decision and demonstration. Now, the strange thing is, when it says modifications, why does he talk about that he didn't say the sweets of sin? Maybe he didn't mention it yet, because he brought that expressly for her. And also that there was that Stephen hurt himself is not something he would hide. So again, the whole is not quite obvious, anything. And again, the sort of the precision is a bit shaky. And then, was the narrator otherwise unaltered by modifications? Meaning, is what he said, other than what is mentioned, is that not changed? And we all know that any report cannot be accurate, even if best me, because you cannot talk in 5 minutes about what you did in 10 hours. And so the answer then is interesting. It says, absolutely. That is what you would say. Oh, absolutely, told everything. But absolutely, you know, is one of the strongest scientific words. If something is absolute, it is absolute. And that, in a way, can only mean, yeah, more or less, relatively. Absolutely is what you might say, but it's certainly not true. And it shows best how Joyce uses the scientific language. Then, which event or person emerged at the salient point of his narration? So Bloom at some length talked about Stephen Dedalus, professor and author. He said that he brought him to his house and invited him to stay. Good. And now we get another long one.
Which event or person emerged as the salient point of his narration? Stephen Dedalus, professor and author. What limitations of activity and inhibitions of conjugal rights were perceived by listener and narrator concerning themselves during the course of this intermittent and increasingly more laconic narration? By the listener, a limitation of fertility, inasmuch as marriage had been celebrated one calendar month after the 18th anniversary of her birth, 8th of September, 1870, viz. 8th of October, and consummated on the same date with female issue born, 15th of June, 1889, having been anticipatorily consummated on the 10th of September of the same year, and complete carnal intercourse with ejaculation of semen within the natural female organ, having last taken place 5 weeks previous, viz. 27th of November, 1893, to the birth on the 29th of December, 1893, of second and only male issue, deceased 9th of January, 1894, aged 11 days. The remainder period of 10 years, 5 months and 18 days, during which carnal intercourse had been incomplete, without ejaculation of semen within the natural female organ. By the narrator, a limitation of activity, mental and corporal, inasmuch as complete mental intercourse between himself and the listener had not taken place since the consummation of puberty, indicated by catamenic hemorrhage of the female issue of narrator and listener, 15th of September, 1903. There remained a period of 9 months and 1 day, during which, in consequence of a pre-established natural comprehension in incomprehension between the consummated females, listener and issue, complete corporal liberty of action had been circumscribed. How? By various reiterated feminine interrogation concerning the masculine destination, whither, the place where, the time at which, the duration for which, the object with which, in the case of temporary absences, projected or effected.
Oh, good. So, what limitations of activity and inhibitions of conjugal rights, you know, conjugal rights, were perceived by listener and narrator? Obviously, they think of it, they probably don't talk about it, concerning themselves during the course of this intermittent and increasingly more laconic narration. So, it's intermittent, as I mean, there are more pauses and more laconic narration. Now, what it must mean is they're tired, they don't talk as much, they talk slower with more pauses and shorter. But laconic is, in a way, the pointedly wrong word, because laconic means you say it very shortly, but very much to the point. And you don't get more laconic when you fall asleep. So again, this is a word that we know what it should mean, but does not mean. Laconic is very terse. Laconic is sort of Samuel Beckett and that kind of thing. By the listener, Molly, a limitation of fertility, inasmuch as marriage had been celebrated one calendar month after the 18th anniversary of her birth, 8th September 1870, with the 8th of October, the marriage, and consummated on the same day, so that is their first copulation, with female issue born 15 June 1889, that is the daughter Millie, whose birthday was on, 2 days before, June 1889. Having been anticipatorily consummated on the 10th September of the same year, and complete carnal intercourse with ejaculation of semen within the natural female organ, and that is the definition, the church definition, as we heard before in the 10th chapter, of copulation, that it must come with insemination. And that, as you know, the church thinks that is the purpose of the whole thing anyway. So that's the last time, having last taken place 5 weeks previous, that is, 1793, to the birth on 29th, of second and only main issue, deceased 9 January, 11 days. So, as we know, Rudy, the male, the boy, was not healthy, and he died after 11 days, that we know. So that means that after their child was, in a way, unable to live, they did not risk having another pregnancy. But anything other than insemination could have taken place. So there was some sexual activity, only not going the whole way. Just to clarify this, because it's often explained differently. There remained a period of 10 years, 518 days, during which carnal intercourse had been incomplete without ejaculation of semen within the natural female organ. So now we know it, there hadn't been complete intercourse. But then also by the narrator, that's Bloom, a limitation of activity, mental and corporal. Yeah, they get a bit strange, don't come close together, don't have much to say to each other, inasmuch as complete mental intercourse between himself and the listener had not taken place since the consummation of puberty, indicated by the cataminic hemorrhage, that is, of course, the period, the menstruation. Cataminic has to do with the month, hemorrhage, of the female issue of night and listener, 15 September 1903. That is when Millie became mature and had her own menstruation at the age of a year ago, 15 September. There remained a period of 9 months and one day during which, in consequence of a pre-established natural comprehension, incomprehension between the consummate females, listener and issue, Millie, complete corporal liberty of action had been circumscribed. So they had gone a little bit astray, alienated a little bit, as of course it may happen in a marriage. I don't quite know if the calculations are exact. I didn't check them. There's one editor who corrects them carefully. I don't know. So this is now a description of their sexual activity. Then, so how had it been limited, circumscribed? By reiterated feminine interrogation. So she has asked more than before concerning the masculine destination, whither, where he was going, the place where, the time at which, the duration for which, the object with which, in the case of temporary absent, projector affection. So obviously she had become to be more inquisitive about Bloom's movements.
What moved visibly above the listener's and the narrator's invisible thoughts? The upcast reflection of a lamp and shade, the inconstant series of concentric circles of varying gradations of light and shadow. In what directions did listener and narrator lie? Listener, southeast by east, narrator, northwest by west, on the 53rd parallel of latitude north and 6th meridian of longitude west, at an angle of 45 degrees to the terrestrial equator. In what state of rest or motion? At rest, relatively to themselves and to each other, in motion being each and both carried westward, forward, and rearward, respectively, by the proper perpetual motion of the earth through ever-changing tracts of never-changing space.
No, good. What moved visibly above the listeners and their invisible thoughts? and that is, of course, the lamp. You already have seen the lamp from outside and on the reflection of the window, the upcast reflection of a lamp and shade. An inconstant series of concentric circles of varying degradations of light and shadow. So the light emitted from the lamp, paraffin lamp. No electricity. In what direction did listener and narrator lie? And now we have the longitude and latitude on the globe of Dublin, not very exact. Listen at southeast by east, narrate at northwest by west. I wonder if anyone can imagine what the bedroom was like. On the 53rd parallel of latitude north and the 6th meridian of longitude west, that seems to be the location of Dublin, at an angle of 45 degrees to the terrestrial equator. In what state of rest or motion? At rest relatively to self and to each other. That means we don't move, just as all of us now do not move. You sit in your chairs and think, but of course we do move around the sun. In motion, being each and both carried westward, forward and rearward respectively, by the proper perpetual motion of the earth through ever-changing tracks of never-changing space. But of course, we do move very rapidly too, only we don't need it. And another editor has found out that westward and eastward is wrong. I couldn't tell that. I could never imagine which way we're going. But it means we're in motion. This chapter puts Hume and Dublin into a, as a cosmic space. Oh yeah, then we go on.
In what posture? The listener reclined semilaterally, left hand under head, right leg extended in a straight line and resting on left leg, flexed in the attitude of Gaetellus, fulfilled, recumbent, big with seed. Narrator, reclined laterally, left with right and left legs flexed, the index finger and thumb of the right hand resting on the bridge of the nose, in the attitude depicted on a snapshot photograph made by Percy Apjohn, the child man weary, the man child in the womb. Womb? Weary? He rests. He has traveled. With? Sinbad the sailor, and Tinbad the tailor, and Jinbad the jailer, and Whinbad the whaler, and Ninbad the nailer, and Finbad the failer, and Binbad the bailer, and Pinbad the paler, and Minbad the nailer, Hinbad the hailer, and Rinbad the railer, and Dinbad the tailor, and Vinbad the quailer, and Linbad the yaler, Jinbad the tailor. When? Going to a dark bed, there was a square round Sinbad the sailor, rocks, orcs, egg, in the night of the bed of all the ox. Of the rocks, of dark and bad, the bright day lair. Where?
So, in what posture? And yet they're described as they lie in the bed. Listener reclined semilaterally on the side, left hand under head, right leg extended in a straight line and resting on left leg, flexed. So you have the description of in the attitude of Gaia Tellus. The attitude Gaia is a Gaia, it should really be, is a Latin word, the Greek word for earth, and Tellus is the Latin word for earth. So there are, in both Greek and Latin, Roman myth, they have an earth goddess. Gaia is the thing that appears in geometry and things like that. And Tellus, we have Tellurian and all that. So this is the attitude in which the earth goddess is sometimes described. And there must be pictures of her. I hope to find one. Fulfilled, recumbent, big with seed. And here you may wonder, who is big with seed We just had a long story about semen and all of that. Is that Molly or is it just a goddess? We can't tell at this moment. Now, Rachel, boom, reclined laterally, left, with right and left are flexed, the index finger and thumb of the right hand resting on the bridge of the nose, in that kind of thing. In the attitude depicted on a snapshot photograph made by Percy Abjong. So there must be a picture of him that some friend did of him in a snapshot. And you see the difference. One is a Greek goddess that you have in statues, and the other is just a snapshot that must exist, of which we haven't heard anything. And then it says, the mind child in the womb. The child in the womb. So Broome is probably like a fetus that may well have the hands in the face, things like that. So that's the idea. And what is interesting here is that Broome seems to retire into the womb, back into that thing in a position like a fetus, whereas Stephen Dedalus, the younger person, has gone out into orbit, we don't quite know where, whereas Broome seems to go back into child possibilities. And then the next question is, so the answer was womb, weary, then says, he rests. He has travelled. He does rest. And he has, in fact, travelled, like Odysseus. And then we get something very strange. We have already heard, and probably don't remember, that Broome once did not take part in a competition to contribute something to the pantomime Sinbad the Sailor. Sinbad the Sailor is, I think, the Persian myth, the kind of Oriental Odyssey. Sinbad the Sailor, that was a pantomime. And in the pantomime, there are some variants of the name, and that is now continued, as Broome obviously falls asleep, and this is what goes through his mind in a kind of endless repetition, that either you read very quick or very slow, and then you sleep. With Sinbad the Sailor, and Tinbad the Tailor, and Jinbad the Jailor, and Winbad the Whaler, and Ninbad the Nailer, and Finbad the Failer. So far, all of these failure words could mean something. Binbad the Bailer, and Pinbad the Paler, and Ninbad the Mailer, and Hinbad the Hailer, and Rinbad the Railer, and Dinbad the Kaler. And I couldn't imagine what that is. And Winbad the Quailer, and Linbad the Yaler, and Sinbad the Taylor. And you see that we come to the end of the alphabet, Y and X, and so on. And Taylor, that combination of letters, PHTH, occurs in Greek words that mean dwindling away. Tisis and all of that. So this is obviously Broome falling asleep to a kind of jingle. When? And then it gets twisted. Broome is probably now half asleep and it doesn't make sense anymore. In fact, what we get here is something that you might easily come across in Finnegan's Wake, though the words are all normal English. Going to a dark bed. There was a square round Sinbad the Sailor, a square round Sinbad the Sailor, rocks, ox, egg. Now the auk is a bird that is extinct, a big one, and ox eggs were the biggest that were ever there. Rock is a bird in Sinbad the Sailor. It's a very strong bird that can that can kidnap babies and things like that. And we have in the foundation, and of course I would show it to you there, we have a picture of a poster where there's a very frightening big bird in the middle that might well follow you at night. Rocks, orcs, eggs, so these are birds, one extinct, one mythological. In the night of the bed of all the orcs of the rocks, of Darklinbad the bright sailor, and Sinbad the sailor becomes dark in bed before the bright day takes over. Then you have where, and you probably in all your books have nothing following. And that's one of the strangest things, because what Joyce did want was not only a dot, but the big dot. So you can now paint the big dot, big black dot, into this. And the last thing is just something visible that ironically has disappeared in the book. Joyce even gave instruction to the printer to make it bigger, and now it's gone. So put it in there, because the last thing is a round dot, a black circle or something like that, that you cannot pronounce. It's visual, like the black hole where everything disappeared, or something like that. Yeah, and that is the very long Ithaca chapter, and you can see it is very very geometrical. It has space between, it has hard contours, edges, and definitions, and all of that, and space. And what's coming now is the opposite, physically, visibly. There's no space between, there's no punctuation, there are no apostrophes. So it's the very opposite. We now come to the last chapter, that is Molly Bloom, who then is in bed. It's not easy to read this technically, because you easily lose the passage where you were. And so try to follow it close and maybe make marks into it. We have this also on tape, and it's usually read with great effect by actresses who, of course, use a very heavy Irish Dublin accent. That is, in a way, that's part of it. And Joyce wrote, I don't have this here. Do you, Silke, do you have it on our folder in front of you? No, because George, I'll tell you next time then if I think of it. And now this is a female voice. It's not easy to hear. Put the sound up as much as you can. I'm not sure I can hear it too well. So this is the last book now, Molly Bloom's monologue. Her husband has fallen asleep. She's awake, and now she has the last word. Okay.
Then on the world the mists began to fall, out of the dreams that rose in happy throng, brought to your hearts that sung an old sweet song. And in the dusk where fell the firelight gleam, softly it moved itself into just a song at twilight, when the lights are low and the flickering shadows softly come and go. but be weary. Sad the day at noon, still to us at twilight comes not so soon, comes not so sweet song.
Yes, because he never did a thing like that before, as asked to get his breakfast in bed with a couple of eggs. Since the City Arms Hotel, when he used to be pretending to be laid up, with a sick voice, doing his highness to make himself interesting to that old faggot Mrs. Reardon that he thought he'd a great leg of. And she never left us a farthing. All for masses for herself and her soul, the greatest miser ever was, actually afraid to lay out fourpence for her methylated spirit. Telling me all her ailments. She had too much old chat in her about politics and earthquakes and the end of the world. Let us have a bit of fun first. God help the world if all the women were her sort. Down on bathing suits and low necks. Of course, nobody wanted her to wear. I suppose she was pious because no man would look at her twice. I hope I'll never be like her. I wonder she didn't want us to cover our faces. But she was a well-educated woman, certainly. And her gabby talk about Mr. Reardon here and Mr. Reardon there. I suppose he was glad to get shut of her and her dog, smelling my fur and always edging to get up under my petticoats, especially then. Still, I like that in him. Polite to old women like that, and waiters and beggars too. He's not proud out of nothing, but not always. If ever he got anything really serious the matter with him, it's much better for them to go into a hospital where everything's clean. Oh, but I suppose I'd have to drink it into him for a month, yes. And then we'd have a hospital nurse next thing on the carpet. Have him staying there till they throw him out, or a nun, maybe. Like the smutty photo he has. She's as much a nun as I'm not.
Look, first the music you heard, very badly, by the way, is Love's Old Sweet Song. That is the song that they were also singing in the afternoon. Why they have such a bad recording, I don't know. By the way, Joyce wrote that this about him, and I couldn't find it at the moment. I should have prepared that this is saying, and there are four parts of the female body and words that come. Yeah, and one of them is yes, because, and it begins with yes, because, and you see, there's no punctuation, nothing. Yes, because he never did a thing like that before, as asked to get his breakfast in bed with a couple of eggs. Since the City Arms Hotel. So something, Bloom must have said something that we didn't hear. We didn't in the previous chapter. He had to give an account of his day and all of that, but we didn't say that at a certain point, Bloom would have said with some kind of energy, by the way, tomorrow I want to have breakfast served, which... for many readers, I know when I was started out, was like a return to what should be normal. Now, there's nothing normal in the world that a woman should serve breakfast, by the way. But for some readers, it was like a thing. But what I say, I haven't been able to discover that he said anything like that. So for me, this is quite doubtful. She may have imagined it. Or something, maybe the X in the last sentence and things like that. So he never did a thing like that. With a couple of eggs, two eggs, since the City Arms Hotel, they stayed, the Blooms, in the City Arms near the cattle market. We know that. It was quite customary to stay nearby in the very cheap hotels. When he used to be pretending to be laid up with a sick voice, notice something, by the way, the language here is quite simple. It doesn't have all these difficult words, these Latin words, but the language is nonetheless very flexible, has a lot of these, the potential of the English language. You see how many verbs there are. the previous chapter was basically noun, not nominal. There were also verbs and a few verbs, and here we have did with used to be pretending to be laid up. Used to be pretending to be laid up is actually a very, very difficult construction. By the way, try to translate that into German, and you will see there are all kinds of problems too. Laid up with a sick voice, doing His Highness, doing it, pretending to make himself interesting to that old faggot, Mrs. Reardon. We've heard of Mrs. Reardon. She stayed in the same hotel, the City Arms Hotel. We know that from the 12th chapter. And some of us also know it from the beginning of a portrait where Mrs. Reardon, an old Catholic woman, was staying with the Dedaluses. But that's in the previous book. To make himself interesting to that old faggot, Mrs. Reardon, that he thought he had a great leg of. That is, we know that Bloom tried to be nice to the old lady, taking her out. We saw that in the previous chapter, in order, because she was supposed to be wealthy, in order to be mentioned in her will, which never took place. And we know that she noticed that. That a great leg off. And she never left us a farthing. Farthing is the smallest coin. All for masses, for herself and her soul. She used it all in the church, because you can give money to the church for masses, for herself and her soul. Greatest miser ever was. Actually afraid to lay out fourpence for her methylated spirit that was probably used to rub into the legs and things like that. She didn't. Telling me all her ailments, as old people do, she had too much old chat in her about politics and earthquakes. And we know in a portrait there was a big discussion about Irish politics. And earthquakes, of course, are God's sign of disapproval. The earthquakes are there to punish us. And the end of the world. Let us have a bit of fun first, Molly says. God help the world if all the women were her sort. Down on bathing suits and low necks. Obviously, she wouldn't approve of female bathing suits or low necks. Of course, nobody wanted her to wear them. I suppose she was pious, because no man would look at her twice. I hope I'll never be like her. So you see how her thoughts change very quickly from one to the other. Hope I'll never be like her. A wonder she didn't want us to cover our faces. But she was a well-educated woman, certainly. And her gabby talk about Mr. Reardon here and Mr. Reardon there, obviously her husband had left her, we learned that she talked about him. I suppose he was glad to get shut of her and her dog. And here you see a problem we have. He was glad to be shut of her and her dog. That makes sense, shut of her dog. But he goes on, and her dog smelling my fur. So that her dog is both the end of the previous sentence and the beginning of the next. And very often you have this kind of overlap. Her dog smelling my fur, and always edging to get under my petticoats, especially them. We can imagine what then is, of course. Still, I like that in him. She finds a lot of fault with things, but then she comes back and also appreciate Bloom. I like that in him. Polite to old women like that, and waiters and beggars too. He's not proud out of nothing, but not always. If ever he got anything really serious the matter with him, it's much better for them to go into a hospital where everything is clean. And the Rembrandt is quite right. When Bloom was stung by a bee in his garden, he ran to the hospital to have it dressed. And she knows it, in a hospital where everything is clean. But I suppose I have to dring it into him. To dring it into him must be an Irish expression. I think we understand that. Emphasize it to him for a moment. Yes. And then we'd have a hospital nurse. And you see, we would, we'd, doesn't have the apostrophe. There is another editor I often mention. He actually reintroduced the apostrophes into this chapter. But I don't think anyone would not understand wed, the word wed, as we would, and give up the book at this point, having gone for so long. With hospital nurse, next thing on the carpet, having staying there till they throw him out, or a nun maybe, like that smutty photo he has. She's as much a nun as I'm not. And we remember in the list of the contents of Bloom's drawer, there were two erotic postcards that she knows. Like a nun, I'm not. Yeah. Here we had a break. So we hear it again.
Yes. They're so weak and puling when they're sick. They want a woman to get well. If his nose bleeds, you think it was, oh, tragic. And that dying-looking one off the South Circular, when he sprained his foot at the choir party at the Sugarloaf Mountain the day I wore that dress. Miss Stack, bringing him flowers, the worst old one she could find at the bottom of the basket. Anything at all to get into a man's bedroom, with her old maid's voice, trying to imagine he was dying on account of her. To never see thy face again. Though he looked more like a man, with his beard a bit grown in the bed, father was the same. Besides, he bandaging and dosing. When he cut his toe with a razor paring his corns, afraid he'd get blood poisoning. But if it was the thing I was sick, then we'd see what attention. Only, of course, the woman hides it, not to give all the trouble they do. Yes. He came somewhere, I'm sure, by his appetite. Anyway, love it's not, or he'd be off his feet thinking of her. So either it was one of those night women, if it was down there he was really, and the hotel story he made up a pack of lies to hide it. Planning it. Hines kept me. Who did I meet? Ah, yes, I met. Do you remember Menton? And who else? Who? Let me see. That big babby face. I saw him, and he not long married, flirting with a young girl at Poole's Miriorama, and turned my back on him when he slinked out looking quite conscious. What harm, but he had the impudence to make up to me one time. Well done to a mouth almighty and his boiled eyes. Of all the big stupos I ever met. And that's called a solicitor. Only for I hate having a long wrangle in bed. Or else if it's not that, it's some little bitch or other he got in with somewhere or picked up on the sly. If they only knew him as well as I do, yes.
No. So, yes, you see the yes punctuate the story a little bit. So when we say there's no stop, of course there are stops and sentences. And of course, when you read it aloud, you have to get your breath. You can't read it in one string. Yes, because that is always a kind of new beginning. Yes, because they are so weak. They, and of course, when she says he or him, we don't always know who it is. They probably means men in general. So weak and puling when they're sick. They want a woman to get well. If his nose bleeds, You'd think it was all tragic. And that dying looking one off the South Circular, when he sprained his foot, obviously he sprained his foot, and he thought it was a terrible thing. At the choir party at the Sugarloaf Mountain. So there was a party with a choir. The Sugarloaf Mountain is a mountain close to Dublin. And of course, Sugarloaf should be capitalized, but she often doesn't do that. Mountain. The day I wore that dress, Miss Duck bringing him flowers, we don't know who it is. Of course, there's a lot of new information we get. Worst old one she could find at the bottom of the basket, anything at all to get into a man's bedroom. With her old maid's voice, trying to imagine he was dying on account of her. To never see thy face again. That is obviously a song that recurs to her, and you could hear it by that. Of course, in this chapter, Joyce does not mark the songs by italics or anything. We have to find out. Never see thy face again. Though he looks more like a man, with his beard a bit grown in the bed, so a bit grown beard, which shows he does not now have a beard. Father was the same. Besides, I hate bandaging and dosing to dress his wound. When he cut his toe with a razor, paring his corns, he had a lot of corns in their teeth at the time, afraid he'd get blood poisoning. Before, if it was a thing, I was sick. This construction is Irish, the way English is spoken by simple people. If it was a thing, I was sick. But if I was sick, it is. So it is, as I say, a kind of Gaelic construction. Then we'd see what attention. Only, of course, the woman hides it. Not to give her all the trouble they do. Yes. He came somewhere, I'm sure, by his appetite. Now, I don't quite know, because Bloom hasn't eaten anything that she saw. And she can't tell about what appetite he has right now. Anyway, love it's not, or he'd be off his feet. So, either it was one of those night women, prostitutes. If it was down there, he was really. Again, if it was down there, he was. Again, this kind of construction. And the hotel story he made up, a pack of lies to hide it, planning it, and she obviously realizes that when he told her, as we just read, that he was in a hotel, Winter Hotel, she didn't believe him, doesn't believe him. A pack of lies to hide it, planning it. And it's interesting what the two, Molly and Bruce, what they hide from each other. Remember when the letter came, Molly also put it aside a little bit. So hiding and hiding. In Greek, it's kalypto, and the first Bloom chapter we call calypso. So there's a lot of hiding and not being open about, planning it. Heinz, and here we can almost hear what Bloom reported to her in the previous chapter. Heinz kept me, the journalist. Who did I meet? Ah, yes, I met, do you remember Menton? This is probably exactly what Bloom said about Menton, the lawyer that he met at the funeral, and they didn't like each other. And who else? Who? Let me see. And then Molly thinks about Menton, that big babby face. I saw him. and he, not long married, flirting with a young girl at Poole's Miriarama. So he was flirting Miriarama, Poole. That was a kind of forerunner of the cinema. It was a, if you have a lot of cards with drawings or photographs of it, you get the impression of moving, and you turn a handle and then you see. It's a kind of a pre-cinema thing, and often the what you could see was slightly erotic, not very much by our stand. Miriarama, and turn my back on him when he slinks out. Obviously, he didn't want to be seen. Slinked. So you see, she isn't quite sure of her. I think it would be slunk out. He slinked out, looking quite conscious. What harm? But he had the impudence to make up to me one time, and we heard that again from Bloom. Bloom beat Menton at the bowls at the game, and Menton said something. I remembered it during the cemetery, and now she also knows it. So the same thing we now have from the three different parties involved. Everybody a little bit different. That is the many perspectives we have. Well done to him. Mouth almighty, and his boiled eyes, of all the big stupid of him, his boiled eyes, and he was already described, he must have big oyster eyes, they said it. So that is a characteristic that is also confirmed, I ever met. And that's called a solicitor. They are called solicitors, lawyers, and the lawyers who appear in court are called barristers, solicitor profession. My guess is that's called a solicitor. It's already a bit of a complicated word. It's because the word solicit is used for prostitutes when they approach you, but I can't tell. Only for I hate having a long wrangle in bed. Or else, if it's not that, it's some other little bitch or other he got in with somewhere, or picked up on the sly. If they only knew him as well as I do. So that's where we stopped. So we do just a little bit more. I stopped there.
They only knew him as well as I do, yes, because the day before yesterday he was scribbling something, a letter, when I came into the front room for the matches to show him Dignam's death in the paper, as if something told me. And he covered it up with the blotting paper, pretending to be thinking about business. So very probably that was it. To somebody who thinks she has a softy in him, because all men get a bit like that at his age, especially getting on to 40 he is now, so as to wheedle any money she can out of him. No fool like an old fool. And then the usual kissing my bottom was to hide it. Not that I care two straws who he does it with, or knew before that way. I would like to find out, so long as I don't have the two of them under my nose all the time. Like that slut, that Mary we had in Ontario Terrace, padding out her false bottom to excite him. Bad enough to get the smell of those painted women off him. Once or twice I had a suspicion by getting him to come near me when I found the long hair on his coat. Without that one, when I went into the kitchen pretending he was drinking water. One woman is not enough for them. It was all his fault, of course, ruining servants. Then proposing she could eat at our table on Christmas, if you please. Oh, no, thank you. Not in my house. Stealing my potatoes and the oysters, 2 and 6 per dozen. Going out to see her aunt, if you please. Common robbery, so it was. But I was sure he had something on with that one. It takes me to find out a thing like that. He said, you have no proof it was her. Proof? Oh, yes. Her aunt was very fond of oysters. But I told her what I thought of her, suggesting me to go out to be alone with her. I wouldn't lower myself to spy on them.
Yeah, I think we stop here. Yes, because, and here you have another yes, because. Because the day before yesterday, he was scribbling something, a letter, when I came into the front room to show him Dignam's death in the paper. So when she found that Dignam had that, she came to him and she saw he was scribbling something. And we know, of course, that he has this letter affair with Martha Clifford, so the correspondent he hid. When I came down the front room, show him Dignam's letter in the paper, as if something told me it's up to the blotting paper, pretending to be thinking about business. So she noticed something. She's quite smart then. So very probably that was it to somebody who thinks she has a softy on him. I think you understand that quite well. Because all men get a bit like that at his age. Especially if getting on to 40. You know, he's 38. He is now. No fool like an old fool. That is a kind of thing. And the usual kissing her like often was to hide it. So it seems that Bloom kissing her backside is a habit, was to hide it. Not that I care two straws now who he does it with, or knew before that way. No, I'd like to find out. This is not quite consistent. I don't really care, but I would like to find out all the same. So long as I don't have the two of them under my nose all the time. Like that slut Mary we had in Lotharia Terrace. When they lived in Lotharia Terrace, they were a bit better off and had a house help, Mary, padding out her false bottom to excite him. Bad enough to get the smell of those painted women off him. Not that you think that he often came home with that smell. Once or twice I had a suspicion by getting him to come near me when I found a long hair on his coat. Without that one, when I went to the kitchen, pretending he was drinking water. She uses pretending quite enough often. And of course, in human relationships, there's often some pretense going on. Pretending he was drinking water. One woman is not enough for them. It was all his fault, of course, ruining servants, and then proposing that she could eat at our table on Christmas Day. So Bloom was probably closer to the maid than she was. If you please. Oh, no, thank you. Not in my house. Stealing my potatoes and the oysters, 2 and 6 per dozen. Going out to see around, if you please. Common robbery, so it was. But I was sure he had something on with that one. It takes me to find out a thing like that. He said, you have no proof. So obviously, Molly thinks he stole oysters. Proof. Oh, yes. Her aunt was very fond of oysters. But I told her what I thought of her, suggesting me to go out and be alone with her. I wouldn't. I think we stop here, suggesting. Because it's in the middle of something, but we come to our time. Make a good sign that you know where you are next time, because we won't find the page. We can't give information. So it is that far. So each chapter has its own problems and difficulties. Yep. But it's probably quicker because it is at short pace and it's running on all the time. That is also what is called the stream of consciousness, because thought doesn't stop. You cannot certainly have You don't have a full stop in your thoughts. In fact, you cannot even prevent going on thinking something. And that is tried to match. Anyway, I hope you like that too. It's very famous and a great piece for Irish actresses. So till next time. No. Next time is Bloomsday. No. Oh, we don't have anything on Bloomsday, because we're celebrating it. Some of you will be in the foundation or where we are anyway. So in 2 weeks. And happy Bloomsday for all of you.
Nice evening. Bye-bye.
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 Bye-bye. Thank you.